This is a replay of the Thursday Night Pie Show. Yes, March 14th on WGN Radio. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together, and I hope you'll spend it with me. More than that, I hope you will call. Yes, because clearly I am befuddled. Last night, I opened the show talking about Pi Day. I went out and I actually ate a pizza to celebrate, and it was the 13th. John comforted me. He said, well, the last hour of the show was the 14th, but that wasn't the point. Yes. So you're talking to a woman who doesn't know what day it is. Clearly, you can win any argument you want. Just make sure it's nothing of substance. So, if all else fails, if you don't call, remember, I've got the tabloids, a fresh pack, and many things to go over. But as far as Pi Day celebrations, they're all over the place because, of course, every commercial entity wants to capitalize on that. But NASA does a Pi Day challenge, and this year, of course, it occurred today, and the answers will be on the website at jpl.nasa.gov tomorrow. And it's like your worst nightmare of word problems, let's put it that way. But obviously, we all know about pi. I say obviously because assuming you have some type of a high school diploma or equivalent, you were stuck with this somewhere along the way and you found out it was a mathematical constant, you know, 3.14, and then the numbers go out practically to infinity. But what's interesting about it is, we were talking last night, is everybody thinks about it in terms of, well, it's easy to determine if you want your corral to be 5 feet wide, you need 3.14 times the amount of fence to go around in a circle. And farmers have known it forever. But NASA uses it, and that's what the Pi Challenge is about. And they calculate things like exploring other planets, so they say. So 18 ways NASA uses Pi. So and it all comes down to math as far as that goes. But parachuting on Mars, that's a big one. Getting new perspectives on Saturn. Mapping unexplored and familiar worlds. Landing on Mars, yeah. And you can read all about this, by the way, if you're wondering how Pi comes into play. But as far as using Pi to search for exoplanets whose orbits are around stars other than our own sun, of course, you know, powerful telescopes come into play as far as that goes, how much light is emitted on distant stars. And when a planet passes in front of a star, the telescope sees a dip in the amount of light that's emitted. And knowing the percentage of the decrease and the formula for the area of the circle, they can deduce the planet's size. So there you have it. And potentially habitable worlds, they use it for that as well. And locating quakes on Mars, talking to spacecraft, driving Mars rovers, getting spacecrafts into orbit. And there's a dozen more. But while I'm saying this, you're probably saying, well, why didn't they explain it to me that way in school? I might have paid attention then. Yeah, and that is the travesty of it all. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And we're going to talk to Dave in LaSalle. He's going to kick it off tonight. Welcome to WGN Radio, Dave.
You there, Raleigh?
I am. Are you there, Dave?
I'm there. Okay.
All right.
Hey, listen, thanks a lot for straightening that, my lost love with the damblers and last night. And
I had fun with that because, of course, it's easy for me to remember it because Danny Webb was such an egotist that he named one group the Dan Lears and the other the Webb Tones. How could you forget it?
Well, I knew if anybody could get to the bottom of it, you would.
Yeah.
Listen, I have one request for you tonight when you could get to it. It's a song done by Ronnie Hawkins. I'm talking around 1960. It's a ballad. It's called Lonely Hours.
Okay.
There may be other songs with that title. I don't think any of them are that song.
Okay.
The only place I've ever heard it was off an album which my brother's got, I think, if he still has it. I remember playing that album, and that's a, it's a nice ballad, by the one by Ronnie Hawkins.
Let's see.
So if you find it.
I'm gonna look right now and see if it's on this computer. If not, I can probably still play it, but I may save it for next week because I'm kind of full up. But let's see. If it's right here and handy, why not? Okay. Oh, just Mary Lou 40 Days and Down in the Alley. All right. Well, I will look for it, and you will hear it.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Appreciate
it. Bye.
All right. So Ronnie Hawkins, you know, did a beautiful job with Mary Lou, like I've often said. Better production on that than the original, which was Young Jesse who wrote it. So 888-876-5593. Starting the show talking about music. I like it already. So let's keep it going here with Brian in Southwest Chicago. What's happening tonight, Brian?
Putting up with panhandling cats if you hear them in the background.
Oh, if they
get their canned cat food in the morning.
Well, you know, if they've actually perfected panhandling, you'll be a wealthy man. You just have to put it on something like YouTube or Twitter or TikTok or one of those. You'll get millions of views instantly, just the word cats.
Yeah, they're not quite that good, although they're more than good enough by half, and I'm not quite that good at recording.
All right.
Thing that had me calling in beyond another little prod for Big Mama Thornton, which we didn't get to last night.
It's coming up tonight.
You might get to, you probably get to it the middle of next week because you already made it sound like the request was.
Yeah, but you see, that's on the list for tonight. I've already picked it out and put it on the computer. So you will hear Big Mama Thornton tonight.
Okay, and the thing that had me calling was Bert Key's wonderful lead into your show.
Yeah.
And Bert Key's recorded on Clock Records. In fact, we've discussed it a time or two that the Doo-Doo-Doo-Ba-Ah was something like the very last 45 that Clock pressed, and that for the flip side, he was actually paying off the Supremes out of the petty cash drawer as they were going out one set of doors and the bill collectors were coming in the other.
That's about right.
But going a couple of years further back when Clock was on Happier Times with Baby Cortez and this happy organ that was a major hit and a perpetual run at every roller rink and ice skating rink, including roller rinks, when I was a kid.
Yes.
And as eternally young as you are, I'm definitely a baby compared to you. So when I was in high school, they were still playing Baby Cortez and the Happy Organ at every roller skating rink in rural mid-America, including the ones that I'd take a girlfriend out on a date to.
Absolutely. That was 1009, February of 59.
Yeah, my question was Bert Keys involved in any of the production or any of the other stuff that you know of on that one? Because, you know, that was not only Cortez's medley of his hit.
Right.
That's probably the only potential exposure anybody between the ages of, say, 45 on up that are still alive would have, you know, Clock.
Uh-huh.
You know, because everybody knows da 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 da.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a couple of top 40 rural nowhere stations that lost their license because of the alcoholic DJ at 2 o'clock in the morning that switched around Happy and Baby.
Yeah, well, you know, the Happy Organ is interesting record because it was the first number one instrumental featuring an organ. And certainly wasn't the last, but the first one. And Doug Moody owned Clock and was sort of their in-house producer. And he was going to record something himself and apparently had laryngitis. And so Dave, who was one of the session guys, was playing piano and was doing a funky version of Shortening Bread. And the engineer yelled, "Try it on the organ!" And he went out and fired up the Hammond B3. And Dave could only play it in the key of C. And they did one take on the instrumental. And, you know, it was a disc jockey in Richmond, Virginia, who broke that, WLLY, Bobby Joyce, I think. And so that it was then Jimmy Schwartz, the distributor, who ordered about 1,000 of them. So that was the deal. Originally, they didn't have a B-side. And then Rinky Dink was offered by Dave. And apparently Doug Moody said no. And, you know, that didn't happen. But anyway, the deal is that Dave wanted off the label. And Doug Moody said, as Berry Gordy had said to others later, "Well, that's fine. Just sign up all your royalties. Sign them over to me and you're gone." And he did. So there you have it. And you know,
you wonder what kind of a place to work, well, that it was to work at.
It was fairly common. Go that far. You know, fairly common. And you know, when Happy Organ broke, he was touring with Little Anthony and the Imperials. He was making $200 a week, which, you know, back then was pretty good money. And at that point, his manager pulled him off the tour so he could promote his own record. And so, you know, and if you look for session lists sometimes, if you look at, you know, the union cards, if you see Dave Clowney, David Clowney is Dave Baby Cortez.
Oh, it's definitely good to know.
Yeah, yeah. But you're right. The organ songs are wonderful for the roller rinks. And my favorite was always "Heartbreak, It's a Hurtin' Me" by Little Willie John. I thought that was a perfect roller rink song.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm delighted you called, as always.
Okay, and thanks for taking my call. And
always.
I look forward to the next 2 hours and...
And whatever it is. Yeah, that's right.
And whatever it is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's right. Good enough. Thanks. I appreciate it. All right, so
yep,
nice to hear from Brian. And it would be wonderful to hear from you. So that would be 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh. But last night, Jimmy P gave me a six-pack. He gave me my marching order, so you'll hear all six of them tonight, including the first one coming up next here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. The Jive 5, yeah. Eugene Pitt's undeniable, wonderful voice. Sugar, don't take away my candy. Richie Adams of the Fireflies wrote that, as he did many songs. 1968 on MusiCorps, and that was the first of the six-pack that Jimmy P. picked out, and a fine choice all the way around. I was thinking about Clock Records, and you know, I often wondered why they didn't break the Beatles. Now, I say that because the guy who owned Clock, I mentioned him before, Doug Moody, well, his dad was Walter Moody, which would mean absolutely nothing to you unless you were in Great Britain, because he was head of popular music at EMI. And so it was that, of course, we've talked before about how hard it was to, you know, get the Beatles to America, including how they kind of were on the back of Frank Ifield when VJ did that that first release. But what's interesting is when VJ did, and of course we've talked about, hey, in many ways, Chicago first place it was heard because Dick Biondi played it. But what happened with Doug is he was disappointed that the VJ thing didn't hit, and he was kind of looking at the group, and I assume that the only reason Clock didn't do anything was they really weren't equipped to. They didn't have their own distribution. They relied on Ember, which, of course, was not known as the distribution king of records in America. So it was that he was just, watching, and of course, then his dad got it placed on Capitol, which was owned with EMI, so that wasn't too difficult. But when the songs first hit, Doug goes to Joey Reynolds at KBW in Buffalo, all 50,000 watts, impersonates Ringo Starr and does an interview. And it was funny because this was before Ed Sullivan, so people now had heard of the Beatles, but no one had ever seen them. And so if you'd seen Doug by then, he's in his 30s. He's not looking like a Beatle. But he rents a limo from the airport and gets to the radio station. And in fact, I think it was Kenny Dino was with him, if you remember Kenny Dino, in the limo. And they did it so that people would think Dino was Ringo because they, you know, he looked younger and all that, and they put him in the wig and all those things, and that the manager was Doug, with his British accent, could pass, and so it was. Now, while he was being interviewed by Joey Reynolds, a jock from WBZ in Boston called the station and asked to talk to Ringo. Now, unfortunately, the jock knew another guy at the station. He said, that's not Ringo. That's Doug Moody impersonating Ringo. And so he said, that's all right. And he gets Doug on the phone off the air and said, you don't get here to my show and be interviewed as Ringo. I'll never play another record for you again. And so after WKBW, they went to WBZ with Kenny as Ringo and Doug being scurried around and doing the interview. And so there you have about the only thing I know as far as anecdotal stories about Clock Records. All right, 888-876-5593. Time for the news. Let's figure out what's going on in the world and be back to you on WGN Radio. Tones, my dearest darling. 1955 on Old Town. It was a flip side, and that was the second of Jimmy P's six-pack, and a fine doo-wop song indeed. All right, so, there's one other thing I was going to tell you about. I was thinking about Doug, and by the way, I was, you know, we were just talking about Doug Moody, who owned Clock Records and Mystic as well. And I was thinking, he must be gone by now. Let me find an obit. And I'm not sure. It looks like last I could find, he was 92 and alive in Oceanside, you know, San Diego County, California. So I don't know. Can't find an obit. So maybe he is. You know, that's one of the problems when you see things online. They don't necessarily date when they've written this stuff. So for all I know, that was years ago. But maybe he is. And that'd be terrific. Doug, before he started Clock and Mystic, worked at Herald and at Ember and did a lot of things, produced Lightning Hopkins, Mahalia Jackson. In the 60s, he moved to Hollywood. He's working for Mercury. And one little story about Mercury while he was there. And by the way, he was setting up an office on Selma in Hollywood, and he shared it with Quincy Jones and Mike Kerb, who all of them at the point were, I won't say starting out, but not yet where they would wind up, to say the least. So, in fact, he had Mystic Sound Studios right there. But nonetheless, he's working for Mercury. That's who's paying the salary. So his dad, of course, at EMI is, a little frustrated because nobody's picking up the Beatles. And this is right before they got to BJ, because they were on the same deal with Frank Ifield. And so Doug, working at Mercury, pitched them. And Mercury said, nah, sounds too much like the Everly Brothers, and they don't sell records. There's no hope for that. Yeah, well, so the guy who told him that was never named, but yeah, sounds too much like the Everly Brothers. Yeah, I think the guy also said something like, and they ain't no Everly Brothers. So there you have, that'll be the end of the Doug Moody stories. But I mentioned he was sharing an office with Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones is still with us and turned 91 today. You know, born on the south side of Chicago, most people think of him as coming from Washington. He went to high school in Bremerton, the other side of the water from Seattle. But he went to Raymond Elementary School in the south side, and that's where he took up the trumpet. And then they moved to Bremerton, and he went to high school in Seattle and played trumpet and all. And He got a scholarship to Seattle University, but shortly thereafter got a scholarship to Berklee School of Music, the prestigious in Boston, and that's what led him to tour as a trumpeter and a pianist and an arranger for Lionel Hampton, and the rest was history for him, and a lot of stuff there. 1980, on his 47th birthday, he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame at 1500 Vine. Yeah, as far as he was prodigious, not in the music industry as well. 7 children by 5 different women, including a couple of daughters with Peggy Lipton, who are one of them is a designer for Walt Disney, and the other one is an actress. So there you have. But 91. All right. So 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. And, I can prattle on all night if I have to, but the show's so much better when you call, so I really hope you will. And if all else fails, you consider it a promise or a threat. I've got the tabloids. Yeah, and I still say, and I don't know why I'm such a sucker for this, because I know that the headlines are much better than the stories. In fact, I don't know what they pay their writers at places like The Star or The Enquirer or any of that, but whatever it is, the heck with that, the headline writers should get 5 times as much, because that's what always causes me to plunk over what is now, for the Inquirer, $7. I know. It's just wrong. I think People's about the same. Yeah, $7. And so, I did, of course, because the one that got me in this week's National Enquirer, Scientology's Doomsday. Oh, I got to read that. And, of course, it has the usual suspects, the Tom Cruise and others. And, of course, you know, they're still talking about Danny Masterson, who was convicted of rape and spending probably forever in jail and, you know, all that. And so the church got rid of him after, excommunicated would be the way you'd say that. But did that after he was convicted. Before that, they were squarely on his side, pretty much. Well, anyway, you can read all about that, and otherwise we'll give you the synopsis. And Beyonce, oh man, oh just man. The phrase I love as far as her country song that was on the charts, did very well in country music as far as that goes, but talk about everybody having a comment, is number one, and you know, she was knocked not only by the country community, but the R&B community. In fact, one rapper said, setting herself up to be ridiculed again. Them critics are not going to accept an ugly blonde wig and bullying. All right. I don't know. I haven't heard the record. But nonetheless, you look at radio formats, and country music seems to be number one with a bullet. And so it is that Beyoncé tried. So I love the phrase, it's hick hop. Yeah, well, she's trying to in fact justify it. Yeah, with a cowboy hat and a blonde wig. All right, well, so that's big news. But we're gonna move over to Chuck from Rockford here in a moment, and hopefully you too coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Molly James. Maureen Gray, Dancing the Strand. And that's the third of Jimmy P's six-pack. And she was actually born and raised in Queens, but the deal is that she was absolutely a Philadelphia original. It was John Madera who found her, and John Madera and David White had written her stuff, and more to the point, got her on Chancellor, like Today's the Day, and, you know, I Don't Want to Cry, and all that. And then Dancing the Strand, like I say, she also did a few things for Mercury, and she had moved to London, like a lot of the R&B performers who were somewhat lackluster in sales here. They became part of that entire Northern Soul movement, and she did very well with her. In fact, she recorded with George Harrison and with John Lennon and others, David Bowie. So she was the real deal over there. Came back home, sadly, 10 years ago, died in Philadelphia. Had bile duct cancer, I think it was. She was only 65 years old. So rest in peace, Maureen Gray. But yeah, Dancing on the Strand, probably what she's most known for. All right, so now, Naoto is in Japan. So it's been a while, Naoto. Thank you for calling. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Okay, so it says we're going to talk about Kawasaki.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think maybe it's kind of off topic for this show.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that we have topics, but you know, a lot of people here think of Kawasaki for motorcycles, and rightfully so. But as you well know, they started out in shipping, and made some incredible things in shipping, and then they were in aviation, they were a locomotive. I mean, if it could be transported, these people transported it. And you know, later they got involved with helicopters and all that. And I know that you know, there even automobiles and stuff like that, and then of course wartime things. But the motorcycle maybe that that most people think about was after the W Series, when they did the H1. But what was the first Kawasaki motorcycle?
To quite frankly, I don't know about it.
Okay, well, I'll look it up. But anyway, so tell me about your interest in Kawasaki.
Yeah, I recently bought brought a motorcycle, so I'm not really knowledgeable about it that much.
Well, I just looked it up. It was 1962, and it was the Kawasaki Meguro. And it was the B8. It was single-cylinder, two-stroke, air-cooled engine.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know. So you got one, so are you loving it?
Yeah, I'm really loving it. It's called ZX25.
Uh-huh.
And it's really great bike, a motorcycle. And,
Now I thought the VX 25 was Yamaha. Is that the same? Is Kawasaki own Yamaha?
No, I don't think so. VX 25 is Kawasaki. And
okay. Yeah. No. I think the VX 25 I'm thinking about is an amplifier. Never mind. But so VX 25 motorcycle. All right.
Right. So the fuel efficiency is not really great, okay. But the sound is great.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well,
so good.
Yeah. So can you ride all year round where you are? How's the weather?
But I can't ride it on winter. But you know, the temperature is getting warmer, so
yeah.
Now I can ride. So
good. Yeah. Good. Well, excellent. So you'll have to send me a picture of you riding your motorcycle.
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
So thank you.
Yeah, we'd love to see it. I'm so glad you called. It's been a while. You're feeling well?
Yeah, I've been feeling really great.
Excellent. Well, enjoy that motorcycle. Spring is coming and you'll have a ball.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Naoto. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, so Yamaha. Yeah, well, you know, I think in terms of audio, but that must be it. But Kawasaki is an amazing company when you look, and like I say, in America, we usually do think of them as motorcycles, and rightfully so, but their history in aviation and in movement of anything, and I think the guy who started it in the 1800s, his father was either into shipbuilding or dry docking or something like that, and that's how he got into it. But it's just a wonderful history. So 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. Chuck is in Rockford. What's happening tonight, Chuck?
Oh, I guess your audience should know that I had met you over at WROK when you were here 30 years ago.
Yeah, more than it's 32 now. Yes, but that's right. 3901 Brendanwood. I still remember the address.
Yeah, well, they're still at it over there.
Well, good. Well, like I've said before, the saddest thing was because they're on the first harmonic of WGN, because WGN is 720, and of course, if you multiply that by 2, you get 1440, and that's WROK's frequency. And at night, I could sit in the parking lot looking at the WROK towers, and if I was in the right direction, I'd hear WGN.
Oh, have you got any lightning stories? Because, you know, you're on those high antennas.
You know,
lightning kind of behaves in a strange way sometimes.
Yes, it does. And no, nothing directly other than, as I mentioned before, when I was assistant chief somewhere in Jeffersonville, Indiana, used to have to take the field strength readings. And literally, when it came to be tornado time, they said, well, don't stay in the building. You're safer outside. I'm like, wait a minute. You got to be kidding me with that. And so, I often think about that. But no, thankfully, the closest I got to being hit by lightning was nowhere near a tower. It was on the Smoky Mountain Parkway, and that was within feet, but never near a tower.
I've picked up some pretty good shocks once when I was a kid with my crystal set.
Oh, yeah.
And another time, I was working on a car, and part of it was sticking out, you know, out of a garage, and when it was storming, you know, and the lightning hit in such a way I could hear it snapping,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
when it from the tires to the pavement, and I got kind of a little bit of a shock there, but it could have been a lot worse.
Well, you know, it's so funny. John came in and said, what do you mean no experience? Your FM got hit. Oh, yeah, the tower got hit. And, man, it fried the transmitter. It fried some of the processing. It was just glorious. And what really bothered me, and this was when I realized, don't get an electrician in town. Get one from Phoenix to come in. Because I had talked about protection and all that and what I wanted for surge protection. And I talked about how much power. Oh, yeah, no, you're covered. And so when, of course, I fried everything, I called him up and said, what the? And he said, well, you're covered if there's a surge in power, if lightning hits it. I said, oh, God. So needless to say, we remediated all of that, got another engineer and actually another electrician and went with a power clamp. So we're protected now.
Do they use, seems to me that, do they use Ignitron tubes?
Hang on. John says I have to go, like, right now. Stay right where you are. Stay right where you are. We'll pick it up right here next hour, hopefully with you on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Nolan Strong and the Diablos. And Smokey Robinson used to say, if I could sing, I'd be Nolan Strong. That was his favorite. And that was 1959 on Fortune. And that was the fourth of Jimmy P's six-pack. And happy to play the Diablos or much anything on Fortune. Love that. We're talking with Chuck in Rockford. And during the break, I took some time. And I didn't look it up, but I tried everywhere I could otherwise with catalogs and everything else here. I don't think anybody's making a tube transmitter today for broadcast.
I'd run into that in some industrial applications too, but it seemed to me that they were using them in some of the transmitters.
Oh yeah, but it's long gone. And of course, for people who don't know, the reason I said mercury vapor rectifier, it's very similar. And Ignitron is, it's gas filled, it's a controlled rectifier, and so when you're dealing with a lot of power, this can be very handy. And this dates back to the 30s. And in fact, anybody who got their ham license a zillion years ago, you know, you had to basically diagram the mercury vapor rectifier tube and all just I remember that so well. But the problem, I'll tell you the advantages as far as that goes. Tubes are much more forgiving as far as that goes, and they're very rugged, so you can abuse them more than solid state. So there's no doubt about that. I know that firsthand. But they are inefficient. For electrical efficiency, solid state, you know, all over the place. Plus, you can hard swap them. So if you have a failure with a tube set, you probably are off the air. But if you're hot swappable, you can probably just change out a module on a solid state. The other thing is, you know, it may not matter unless you're buying a used transmitter, but with tube sets, they're not frequency agile. I mean, it can be done, but it's very difficult. With solid state, it's very, very easy. So, but the biggest problem, and I've heard this over the years from a lot of engineers, is that manufacturers have not made a reliable tube for broadcast in a long time. And so engineers don't like dealing with what's going to basically go out sooner rather than later. And so, you know, as far as I still have a transmitter, I'm not using it right now, a Gates 1 that's a tube set. And I actually liked it because it had no protection, like for you know, reverse power, the VSWR, nothing. And of course, when the whatever it was, the Eagle or whatever the heck it was in our transmitter, I could use that and stay on the air. Now, with a solid state, it had so many things built in that it just stopped itself from being eaten alive. But other than blowing some tubes, I could keep that Gates 1 on the air. It's not usable now, but it was. So I don't think Ignitrons, like I said, they go back to 1930.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not far from that myself, you
right,
know.
I
was born in 35, so.
Yeah, well, but nobody's using them anymore. Now, they may be in other applications. And you will also still see in a lot of, especially do-it-yourself ham gear, there's still a lot of tube stuff going on in that. But as far as, you know, broadcast, I could be wrong, and I hope somebody who knows more will call and tell me, but I can't think of anybody who is selling a tube transmitter for AM or FM broadcast use.
Yeah, well, I think that, yeah, like you say, that stuff is gone by the wayside.
And also, remember, it's so much smaller. It may only take a couple IUs of rack space, and it's so much cooler. You know, I mean, you go back to some of the transmitters that, you know, they had a moat at WLW. It was water-cooled, and that was true of WAPE in outside of Jacksonville as well. So, you know, there are so many advantages to solid state. Now, of course, tubes are still used in some amplifier. And, you know, there's many of us who like the pear-shaped sound of a tube and don't feel that solid state will ever fully equal it. But as far as for broadcast use, forget about it.
Well, you know, I guess if you were my age and raised before television and all that stuff, that you have a better theater of the mind, too, when you hear something.
Of course.
You know, like you can imagine... you create a scene.
Right, of course. Oh, absolutely, yes. And that's what's so wonderful because, in fact, it was, I'm trying to think of his name right now. He was so great. He used to do radio commercials about, you know, I saw it on the radio. And the one about the giant maraschino cherry, I have to get these out sometime. But yeah, what you can do with the mind is a zillion times better than whatever you can do with visual medium, absolutely.
Well, you know, someone had mentioned the Armstrongs on your program. I don't know if you ever listened to them. But I used to listen to them there on KXEL in that station in Waterloo.
Right, the world tomorrow.
Late at night.
Yeah, the world tomorrow. Yeah.
And I just heard somebody quote Herbert W. Armstrong here about a week ago, some prophecy that he was talking about with stuff going on in Israel and that.
Well, but, you know, that unfortunately, that's been a doomsday for a lot of people who have, you know, of the cloth, who have prophesied that, you know, the end times are here. And they forgot about the part that no man is going to know the timing of this. And so...
Well, that's for certain because it almost... every time you turn around, why it looks like
Right. No, absolutely it does. Yeah, it looks like we're in the rapture. Yeah, no, absolutely it does. I'm trying to think of the guy more recently who did that, lost most of his flock over it, but on two occasions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember?
Yeah, if he predicted it.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he predicted it. It was going to happen over, I think, Rosh Hashanah 1987 or something. Well, anyway, I had a friend who didn't paint their house because he thought the end was there. I said, just paint your house.
But,
yeah. I'm trying to think of him. Anyway,
I recall reading something about Herbert Armstrong when he was younger, had went to work for Ford Motor Company because they were paying $5 a day, you know.
But, sure, yeah. Well, the Worldwide Church of God. Yeah.
Oh, and I've got one for you that have you Bishop Fulton Sheen?
Oh, of course.
Have you?
Of course.
Well, I remember two of his sermons, and one of them was right after World War II, I guess, because he was talking about all of the wonderful things that we were going to be able to do with atomic energy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, now, and he was talking about running a car on well, like uranium or something, you know.
Yeah.
About the size of a pea, and that would, and you would wouldn't even have to fuel it. It would outlast the car.
Yeah, and the driver. Absolutely, and, you betcha.
Yeah, and then another one, which surprised me that he would even mention it. He said was talking about when he was a kid, wringing the necks of chickens, you know, and okay. I'm thinking about a bishop ringing the
right,
chickens.
Right, right, yeah. Well, yeah. He was colorful, if nothing else, and yes, you probably go online and read everything about him. He had a lot to say about Hiroshima and you name it. So yeah. Oh, I remember them all, believe me. I loved every one of them. Of course, you know, I wasn't a faithful follower of any of them. I found it, you know, like a sitcom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, There's a number of them that do you remember Dr. Dean Adele?
He was not a preacher, though.
Oh, no. But, I mean, I used to listen to him on the radio, and I really picked up a lot of good health information from him.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, you changed subjects there. That's a...
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, he'd come on, you know, at the same station at a later time, but let's see, another one, Norman Vincent Peale. I used to listen to him once in a while.
Right. Oh yeah, the list is endless, and there's still a ton of them today. I don't know if he's still big. He was up till about at least 10 years ago, and after that, I don't know. But Benny Hinn from Orlando, he had it going on, and there are just so many. Of course, Grace Cathedral.
Oh yeah,
you know our.
It seems like I don't know. I actually had it on my bucket list to see the. Crystal Cathedral there, you know.
Oh, yes.
With Schuer.
Yes, I'm laughing because I had a friend. In fact, he was a very good friend. He ran WLW and Avco Broadcasting, Charlie Murdoch. And I remember one time he came to L.A., and of course I'm from there originally, and he said, I want you to take me to the Crystal Cathedral. I said, okay, you know, that's Orange County, but sure, I'm up for a drive. Why? Well, I paid for a bench. I said, oh, God.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he bought a bench.
I think he ran out of donators or something.
That's not all. It was in Garden Grove, actually, and I think it's now the Christ Cathedral, but it was the Crystal Cathedral originally, and oh yeah, there was a lot of stories there.
But actually, he was in Rockford there once, and I with him and Zig Ziglar.
Uh-huh, perfect.
And I kind of regret that I never got to meet either one of them. I had kind of had that on my list as something I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even know if I would have gotten to talk to him. But I remember Zig Ziglar used to say,
oh, yeah.
Your race will be effective when you are. Right.
Well, the interesting thing about the Crystal Cathedral, which opened in 1980, and I think it was like 1981, Charlie said, let's go to the Crystal Cathedral. But anyway, it was at the time, it was 40 acres, and the whole thing, including the Crystal Cathedral, only cost $18 million. Now, of course, back then that seemed like a lot of money, but it wasn't, you know, when you get right down to it. So, and then, you know, of course it kind of went down in flames, but then...
Well, in retrospect, you know, the way inflation's been, if I had made a few wise purchases at one time, I probably would have never actually had to do anything but refinance them, you know?
Right.
But...
I
guess, you know, I'm getting up there in the years where it probably, I don't know how much it gets closer every day.
Well, that's right.
You know,
we don't know. So why think about it? And I'm ready for the journey anyway.
I had a great aunt that made 105.
Wow.
I guess you got a listener that was supposed to be 105. Yeah. Did you ever get to talk to her?
I don't know. You know, here I am, not even near 105, and when I get off the air at night and I do a little recap of the show, I can't even remember what I talked about 20 minutes ago. So, my God, you're asking me about a listener.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I have no idea.
Too, but,
yeah.
All
right. Well, very good. Very good. Yes, the Hour of Power. That was the Crystal Theater. And now it's...
That's
right.
Yeah,
the Hour of Power. All right. So, yes.
He started out in a drive-in.
Right,
and he used to get onto the projection booth and preach off of that, I guess, to
right.
the people. And
right, and they did. They had drive-in service, and then of course later some guy set up the drive-in funeral parlor. It was unbelievable. Only California, I guess. Florida actually had some of those too. But the problem, of course, is that it was money. And the board and made Shuler and his wife resign, and it had to do with how he was using the money and the likeness and the sermons on Hour of Power, and so the board basically took the whole family out of there, is what happened. So it was quite the scandal. It wasn't as good as Trinity, Jan and Paul Crouch, but it was, and I'm sure that there's probably documentaries on the demise of the Crystal Cathedral, because it was quite the scandal at the moment. So
well, he had a lot of large contributors there.
Yes,
he used to get himself in a jam by getting behind. Kind of like Oral Roberts,
right? No, well, that's another story. We can save that for another night. I got lots of those too. But Shuler was preaching from that Garden Grove Drive-In movie theater, and is what it was. And what benefited him was they built the Santa Ana Freeway right by it. So, like, he had his own exit, and, you know, he was near Knott's Berry and Disneyland, which is so, I mean, he was in an absolutely perfect location as far as that goes. And then after he outgrew the drive-in, that's, you know, when he wanted to design a larger building. And but
did they ever have any problems with that building?
You say that, I think about Oral Roberts. I can tell you some problem about some of that stuff, but no, I don't know of any structural problems with it. No.
Yeah, architecturally wise.
Yeah, it was interesting.
It sounds like, you know, all glass or whatever.
Glass and it's steel. It was glass and steel, and 128 feet tall or whatever, and could seat 3,000, including Charlie's bench. And they completed it in 1980, you know, right when Ronald Reagan got elected and all that kind of stuff. And so so it was interesting because times were changing. Orange County was changing. And by 1980, the new residents were not really looking at the Hour of Power broadcast the same way the older residents had been looking at this. So by the time it opened, you were seeing membership rolls diminish. So they filed for bankruptcy, I think, around 2012 or so, and then, like I said, the Catholic diocese came in there eventually, and now it's owned by them, and it's still there, but it's, you know, a little different. All right,
yeah,
you've pretty much run me right into the news again, so I'm going away.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
I
appreciate the call. Okay, good. I hope so. Thanks, Chuck. Good to hear from you. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up on WGN Radio. James and the Nutmegs, Love So True, 1957 on Herald, and I think that's the fifth of Jimmy P's six-pack, and happy to play that. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. Let's see, we'll try to do it in order. I don't know that I'll know that, but we're going to talk about Mr. Chubbs. Hi, Elizabeth, how's it going?
Hello.
How's Mr. Chubbs?
Well, you wanted to know what happened with Daylight Saving Time.
Yes.
Our old schedule was he would get up whenever I got up at 7, 8, or 9 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
He had his weight reduction food.
Okay.
Then he ate again at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, his food with some pumpkin mixed in it.
Uh-huh.
And then about 9 o'clock, he had a little bit of his food with some green beans and blueberries or whatever I had.
Okay.
So the time changed. The morning went fine. But I fed him then at 3 o'clock, but he wasn't even looking for a meal because he was thinking it was 2 o'clock.
That's right.
So now I don't know. I guess we'll just stay like that.
Well, what happened at 9?
At 9?
Yeah.
He waited till 10.
He did. All right. So he does daylight saving time be damned. As far as he's concerned, it's 2 o'clock, not 3 o'clock. But he's okay with 7 a.m. Even though it's daylight savings, he seems to be all right with that change.
Well, it was either 7, 8, or 9, depending on what I had to do.
All right. So he's used to a choice.
Variety
there.
In the morning.
Yeah, but then 2, and so here you are, 3 o'clock, saying, "Well, it's 3 o'clock," and he's like, "Oh no, it's not." Interesting.
He's looking at me very quizzically, but happy. Oh.
You're offering him food. That's right. He wouldn't care when it was, of course. Well, I wonder how long it'll be before he fully acclimates to the new schedule.
I'm not sure that we'll even try. We'll just stay like we are and figure it out when it changes again.
Okay. Well, that's good. He'll like that. He'll appreciate that.
Oh, he's a winner. All right.
Oh, man.
Hey, Raleigh, I wondered, did you ever talk about that radio tower that was stolen in Alabama?
Well, yeah, I've talked about it at length, and I don't buy the story.
You don't?
No, not at all. That tower's been down a while, and this is a guy who was running a translator without a primary AM. And so what he tried to do was to file with the FCC saying that my tower's just been stolen. I want you know, to be able to use the translator to originate programming. Well, the FCC said, no, it's a translator. You're not going to originate originate programming. But at that point, what he didn't expect was it went viral. Everybody heard about this, how you know, the tower was stolen. And but if you look at pictures, and including a lot of the Google Earth pictures and stuff like this, and you look closely at this building, that tower has been down a while. It didn't just disappear one day by thieves. And there were so many other things as well. I mean, normally they would steal the ground system. There's copper in that. But, you know, so I do not think it's real. He swears it is. But what happened is iHeart, the old Clear Channel, gave him one of the HD3 channels from one of their stations in Birmingham. And so he's able to use his translator to rebroadcast the HD3. Now, I didn't look at it. I thought that would have been greater than the 60 dB coverage area limitation, but maybe not. But anyway, he's back on the air using that HD3 as a ruse for why he's able to originate on a translator. And now it'll come up to, will anybody, the FCC or somebody else, do some due diligence to find out exactly when that tower went down? For one thing, he swears that that they were broadcasting and the power bills will reflect it. Well, I'm not so sure, because AM radio, you know, even at 1,000 watts, that's a pretty costly nut every month. I would suggest someone pull all of his power bills and see how that's been going.
Well, why would he do such a thing?
Well, again, all right, here's the deal. You cannot broadcast, you cannot originate programming on a translator. That's an FM translator is 250 watts. It is limited to rebroadcast, so it's a passive thing. It's not a fully licensed radio station by any means. It needs a primary station that is fully licensed. Very often it is an AM station, and the AM stations that want to get more listeners who aren't listening to AM anymore, they'll put an FM translator on the air, and they'll say, like, you know, we're now 105.1. Well, that's a translator, but there's no rule that says they have to say it's a translator other than three times a day in announcements. But why he'd do it, let's put it this way, if he really has been originating program, which is so against the FCC rules, what if he thought there was going to be an inspection soon? He had to kind of cover himself, didn't he? The tower just fell down. It just happened. I'd like to see his meter readings. You know, you're supposed to do that every week. I'd like to see, they don't do proof of performance anymore, but you still, once a year, certainly document some things about your signal. So I don't buy it. I just don't buy it.
Raleigh, what was a translator? I don't even know what you mean by that.
All right. Repeaters, got to understand this first. Repeaters are stations that are on the same frequency of the original station that will repeat it to increase on signal strength. There's a lot of reasons you don't want to repeat on the same frequency. So translators allow you to rebroadcast the programming that is on a fully licensed station on this, it's not fully unlicensed, but on the secondary service of the translator. So that way, you know, maybe his little AM at 1240 or whatever, you know, nobody's really listening to that. But heck, if he can be on there at 92.5 or whatever, well, that gets listeners. So on this translator, that's what is really getting the listeners. But they don't usually stand up other than three times a day and say, we're a translator. And you always know if it's a translator, because it's not call letters. The way it'll work is it will be a K or a W, then it'll be three digits, and that's the channel number, and then after that it'll be a letter like A through Z, depending on if you're the first one on that frequency who did this. So if you're hearing something like K286BS, you know that's a translator. And 286, well, you're going to know where that is on the dial. So 105.1, I think, is 286. But anyways, it cannot originate programming, but a lot of broadcasters do this. They flout the law, the regulations, and they originate programming. But if they're caught, it can be not only fines, but absolute license revocation all the way around. So let's say this guy has been using his translator as his primary station. And let's say, let's say he's on 92.5. I don't know where he is. And he's been calling it all along, you know, whatever he calls it, hot 92.5. Well, that's a translator. That's not a licensed station. So if the FCC were to come by, they'd want to know, where's the licensed station? Well, there isn't one. So this guy went ahead and said, oh, our tower was stolen overnight.
Well, he did have letters, W something or other.
Well, no, of course, but those were the call letters of the AM, not the call letters of the translator.
Okay.
Of course. Okay. You hear this all the time, and I don't know in Chicago. I should look that up to see who's using a translator. In major markets, and of course, when you get to a market as big as Chicago, you're dealing with a lot of land area. So 250 watts maybe won't go as far. In a small market like where he is, 250 watts will go as far as any fully licensed radio station. So let's see who we got for. I'm looking to see. Okay, WBEZ. You know WBEZ. Well, they've got a translator, and they've got W215CL, and that cannot originate programming. It can only rebroadcast what WBEZ, the primary, would be doing. And so the W216CL, that's 91.1. Of course, that's non-commercial, but so is But so Chicago Public Radio, what they do, actually that particular translator is 50 watts, but it increases their coverage in some places. But you also will get like a W240EH, that's WCGOAM in Evanston. And so the FM, so they may say we're WCGO, and of course the 240 means they're 95.9. So they could say we're WCGO 95.9. Hell, they could call themselves Fred if they wanted, as long as three times a day, and I'll tell you exactly, there's times. One's in the noon hour, right around noon, as close to noon as possible. Another one, I think, is the 9 a.m. hour, and then one like the 4 p.m. hour. Anyway, there's three of them. And so at that point, you'd hear them say W240EH, which is the call letters, Evanston. But they're rebroadcasting WCGO-AM, and they're probably tied to it. So that 1590 in Evanston, Chicago's new talk, they are the fully licensed station. What this 95.9 W240EH is doing is just rebroadcasting it on FM. They can't originate anything. So the rules say, let's say in this case, WCGO-AM went off the air. I don't know, their tower did fall down or something. Well, at that moment, W240EH would have to suspend operation. You see, it's like a WVON is a perfect example. They've got a translator. They've got a W252AW, which is 252 means it's 98.3. So the primary station is WVON-AM, but they're also at 98.3 saying they're WVON, but they're really W252AW. But if WVON-AM, which these days is in the EB, the extended band, they're up at 1690. If that station went off the air, they would have to cease broadcasting on the translator. If they continue to broadcast on the translator without the primary station, in this case that AM, they'd be in flagrant violation of FCC rules. Now, one of the problems you have in Chicago is not only is the city really big, meaning that the translators maybe don't cover the whole market, but the other thing is it's so tight with FM signals that you're usually not going to get 250 non-directional if you're somewhere in town. So like in the case of W252AW, they're using 120 watts directional from their tower site. But it still is probably, and that tower site is actually a nice tower site. I think that tower site is right off Lakeshore Drive. But regardless, the bottom line is that they're not broadcasting on that if that AM is not on the air. So this is a guy who had an AM that wasn't on the air, and he was broadcasting on a translator. Well, how better to explain it than, oh, gee, well, suddenly the tower fell down. You know,
Will we ever know if he gets fined?
Oh, yeah, we'll know. But okay. This is a version of the dog ate my homework.
I did eat my library book.
Right, exactly. So this will be interesting to see how it's handled, because they did get approval to rebroadcast the HD3 signal of the iHeart station. They got full approval of that, and the fact that iHeart is owned separately from this station, I don't think the distance rules apply. So they're probably absolutely within the regulations by doing that. But the question is, what was going on for the past 2 or 3 years?
Mm-hmm. I see.
And I hope someone will look at that, because flagrant misuse of translators is one of the biggest problems we have in broadcasting today.
Mm-hmm. One more quick question.
Yeah.
Our local station, years and years and years ago, they were supposed to be on 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
But the chief engineer left and one of the announcers left. And so it ended at midnight.
Right, a lot of them did. John said, I better shut up like right now because I forgot about Walter. I'll talk to you soon. We'll pick it up right there.
Okay.
All right. So, yes, it is time. That's right. It's the mighty time. And it's time for Walter's Perspective, and that's sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
You stole my kisses and broke my heart. You told me, darling, we would never part. You know I love you. Please say you love me, sweetheart. Right from the start, and then you left me with a broken heart. But I still love you. Please say you love me, sweetheart. I love you, dear. I miss you, dear, and I need you. So please come back and say you need me too. Without your love, my heart.
WGN Radio, I'm Robbie James. Well, that does a little more justice, I think, the Spaniels from 1955 on VJ. You painted pictures, and Bernie Roth wrote that. He was mostly a blues songwriter from Gary, Indiana, where he worked as a butcher. Indeed. But when he wasn't chopping meat, he was writing fine songs like You Painted Pictures. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888-Raleigh. Let me give an answer to Elizabeth and Mr. Chubbs about her question there when I so rudely interrupted myself. Here's the deal. Radio stations are licensed. They have to air beyond the air, two-thirds of the time between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., and two-thirds of the time between 6 p.m. and midnight. There's no requirement they be on the air between midnight and 6. Those are the hours. That's the way it works. Stations routinely used to shut off at midnight. I mean, we've talked before, that's how Herb Jepko got the time, because KSL signed off like many stations, and he said, well, what if I could have the time? And they said, well, we won't pay you, and if it doesn't work out, you can't have your daytime shift back. He said, well, that's all right. And of course, it did work out. So television stations routinely did too, would sign off after the Tonight Show if they were an NBC affiliate, or the Evening News if they weren't. And so that was fairly common. But that's the deal. For radio, I know it's two-thirds of daytime and two-thirds of evening. I don't know what the hours are for television, but I'm sure it's something along those lines. Now, Barb in Yorkville hung on forever, and all she has is a Platters request. So what do you want to hear, Barb?
Some Platters music.
Well,
I love the Platters.
Let's talk about the Platters a moment, because, of course, they were, you probably liked them from when they were on Mercury, all those standards like Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Twilight Time.
Yes, those are the ones, yes.
Yep, that's the second incarnation. The first incarnation was on Federal. It was doo-wop. And the third incarnation was on MusiCorps, and that was more beach music like I Love You 1,000 Times. But we'll get you maybe Twilight Time.
Oh, I love that one. That's my favorite, Twilight Time.
That's what you're going to hear.
I love that one.
You'll hear it next.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay, honey, thank you.
All right, good deal. So Barb will hear Twilight Time. Why not? So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, we have Laura in Willowbrook. I'm so sorry it took so long. Hello, Laura. Well, I'm so sorry it took so long. Laura went to sleep or elsewhere. I'm sorry, Laura. I didn't mean to cause your short shrift. It's one of those things. Is Eduardo in Tampa hanging in with us tonight?
Yes, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. Okay, before we do anything else, I was reminded, actually, by Barry in New Hampshire. He said, you haven't asked Eduardo about his job search. And I hadn't in a while, so tell me how it's going.
There's... Yeah, there's no breaking news as of yet.
Really? Really?
Yeah, I did send out an email as usual, but I'm still waiting to hear back because I sent out an email monthly, you know, kind of get an update. But I haven't gotten any response back yet, so...
I don't understand
this. But the last email... Yeah, I mean, last email says, oh, yeah, there's something possibly coming up in the near future, but...
Well, come on.
Nothing...
Someone bilingual who doesn't have a criminal track record, who wants to work, mm-hmm. I would have thought you would have had a job in 22 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. All these people saying they can't find employees, here you are. Well, this is just wrong. Well, let us know how we can help your search.
Well, I'm sure something will come up. I'm confident something will come up, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I think Dollar General is going to have a lot of openings, but I don't think you want to work
there. Yeah, they're closing a lot of... Well,
they are.
Speaking of Dollar, they're closing a lot of stores.
Yes.
Dollar Tree, I believe, is closing a lot of... apparently, they found... Yeah. Well, they claim to have blamed it on something regarding the lettuce or something.
Yeah, who knows?
That's what they say.
Yeah, who knows? They're closing a lot of bank branches, too.
Right.
That's surprising.
Right, they're doing that.
Mm-hmm. But there's got to be something perfect for you. You speak Spanish, you speak English. I mean, I assume you walk erect and aren't drooling.
No, I'm pretty awake. And then I was a little bit disturbed about hearing somebody today during the day who is a anti-career coach. And they really don't have any problem with, you know, being at a job for, I mean, a month or less and just moving on because they just don't want to sweat, you know, the hard times. At one job, if they don't, you know, if they don't like it, or they're not making enough income, so they just move on to something else.
Yep.
So that was kind of disappointing, but you know, this is a young person, you know, so they were brought up differently.
And here you are looking for work. I just don't understand it. So keep me posted.
Oh yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I was going to bring up WGHB in. It's near Clearwater. Is it pronounced Dunedin?
Dunedin.
How do you pronounce
Dunedin.
It? Dunedin. Oh.
Dunedin. That's where the Fenway Hotel is.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Looks it's like a nice famous hotel. I saw it on the news during the day today. Play jazz. They got a rooftop.
Right.
Over there. It was a precursor to WFLA.
Yeah, no, the Fenway Hotel is well known. That's been around for forever. And, I think their slogan is, place humming with soul. So, they've got the,
I need to go check that out. Yeah. Next time I'm near Clearwater.
Yeah. It's just north of Clearwater. And yes, WGHB used to broadcast from there at the Hi-Fi Rooftop Bar in 1925. And not unusual, a lot of radio stations started in hotels. Hell, I know of some cases where the water-cooled transmitter was the bathtub. So it in one of the rooms, it happens. But they do like events as far as that goes, local artists and stuff like that. So you can check it out because some of it's old school and neat and definitely I would highly recommend.
Oh yeah, I mean old school, sure, that'd be up my alley. Sure.
Right, exactly. So and it's right up in Dunedin. So,
Yeah, well, I'm glad I saw that this during the day today. Yeah.
It's right there on the Gulf, and, you know, it's one of those, you know, old and well-kept places.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, another thing before I get off, candy sales. I was reading this in the Tampa Times. So they kind of, like, took a dive after our little health episode 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so now they think that it's still good because when people are stressed, they can go for that smack of gum kind of to relieve stress. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that I know that all the candy was in decline. I think you probably some of your biggest fights will be what's good and what's not. you know, you'll have the camp that says it needs to be toffee, and God forbid you have the camp that likes the candy corn, and of course those who just want milk chocolate, and you know, so yeah, people may be buying less candy. That wouldn't totally surprise me. What I'd love to know, and I've seen charts of this, and of course they always do it around Halloween time, which I don't think is a good representation, because what people are buying for Halloween may be more affected by how many trick-or-treaters they think they're going to have than not. And, you know, gum, nobody's buying gum anymore, statistically speaking, and all that. But one of the things, and you probably read this in some of the articles, is the candy sales dropped as the prices rose. So, you know, in terms of real dollars, you're probably seeing candy sales growing, not dropping, because it costs more.
Yeah, I don't know if I told you this in my previous talks, but when I was in Chicago over there by Goose Island on the north side, the Wrigley Company had a research center, and anybody can, from young people to retirees, consider a terminal, and they could taste different types of gums. I guess they wanted to see kind of like the public's reaction.
Yeah,
and then they give you like a little like gift card that you can, you know, spend whatever, and I thought that was pretty neat to answer. What is the texture? What is the what else? The structure of the gum. What do you think about this? It's like some questions you would answer, and then you would get that little card.
Yeah,
kind of like a monetary thing. It was pretty neat. I kind of enjoy. I miss that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And most of the manufacturers that will, you know, have, if they have factory tours or stuff like that, they'll always be samples and stuff like that. Now, I think that during the lockdown, chocolate sales did go up, but I don't know, which I can understand. But I don't know where they are now. But like I say, even though in actual pounds sold, it's dropping, in dollars, it's bigger than ever because it's more expensive.
Right.
So, you know, and then you read about, I read a while ago, that candy sales have plummeted in India. Well, I have absolutely no idea. And then other people say diet candy is on the rise. You know, just the thought is nauseating to me. But, you know.
Yeah, I never went for that diet
No,
stuff.
No,
diet
no. Look, if you're going to do it, do it. You know, it's really, really interesting. And then there was some
sparkly nice.
Yeah. There was an article around Halloween that was talking about candy knockoffs because of the increase in price. Now, I don't know that I'd want a fake peanut butter cup, but apparently there are people ready to make it. But remember sweet tarts? Of course, you can't even find those anymore. So I'm sure they're dropping. Yeah. Who the hell can buy them? So, I don't know. I also don't know if we're really eating healthier, and that's an argument too in a lot of articles on that. For one thing,
Art,
if you're going to eat organic, it's going to cost you a pretty penny. So even people who want to eat healthful, they look at those prices and say, no, I'll just take the hamburger.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that. Yeah,
absolutely.
It is more expensive.
It is more expensive, yeah. That's right. So it's a luxury.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm going to get off, but
thanks
enjoy
for
the weekend, and we'll talk next week. I'll be in Dallas next weekend.
Oh, all right. Well, I can't wait for the
But I'll still call in on Party Tuesday.
Okay. Good. Now, Tuesday.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Okay. Tuesday and Thursday next week are short shows. Apparently, it is March Madness. And to be 100% honest, I'm actually somewhat glad about this because it's been not good physically recently. And I was even saying to John, I don't know, you know, one of those things. And so I saw, Tuesday, I only get a half hour, and Thursday, I only got a half hour. And usually I'm raring to do the show, but now I'm thinking, oh, more time in bed. I'll take it. So I believe, let me see what the deal is with Wednesday, because I think there's something there too. But let's see. This would be, See, they send me these nice notes, and I don't put it on my calendar. I am a bad, bad girl. So let me see if I can find the nice note, the email from WGN. Just look for that. All right. And here we go. Here we go from the lovely Ashley. Oh, this is not next week. It's the week after. Oh. Well, Tuesday, 3:26, 11 to 1. Wednesday, 3:27, 10 to 1. But Thursday, 3:28, 12 a.m.-ish. All right, so that's it. But we already had, now where was this? Monday 3:18. Okay, so Tuesday 3:19, 12:30 to 1. Wednesday 3:20, 11 to 1. And Thursday 3:21, 12:30 to 1. Don't trust me. I'm a woman who thought it was Pi Day yesterday. But I'll try to put it on the website once I can, you know, figure out where I am. All right, so Laura has called back. Okay, Laura, sorry about that. She called back and we lost her again. Well, all right. I think she wanted to talk about Minnie Riperton. I don't know how we keep losing her, but we do. We'll get to Karen in Chicago, James on the South Side, but we'll get to Twilight Time for Barb next on WGN Radio.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. Tis twilight time. When purple colored curtains mark the end of day, I'll hear you, my dear, at twilight time. Deepening shadows gather splendor as day is done. Fingers of night will soon surrender the setting sun. I count the moments, darling, till you're here with me. Together at last at twilight time. Here in the afterglow of day, we keep our rendezvous beneath the blue. Hey, in the same and sweet old way, I fall in love again as I did then. Deep in the dark, your kiss will fill me like days of old, lighting the spark of love that fills me with dreams untold. Each day I pray for evening just to be with you, together at last at twilight time.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And of course, those are the platters for Barb and Twilight Time. And Buck Ram, manager Buck Ram, co-wrote that. And it was recorded, Twilight Time, in New York City at Mercury Sound Studio, December 6th, 1957, and would become one of their most memorable hits from that period. And it was Buck Ram who, of course, really fought for that pop standard sound, which was so different from when they were on Federal and doing all that doo-wop. And, of course, I've mentioned many times, Mercury did not want the Platters. They did everything. They were forced to take them because they wanted the Penguins. And, you know, Earth Angel. Hey, who wouldn't, right? Except the Penguins never had another hit. And the Platters had hit after hit after hit. The group that Mercury said, we don't want them. Suddenly, oh yeah, we'll take them. And then later in the mid-60s, they wound up on MusiCorps, and that was all that great beach music like I Love You 1,000 Times. But there you go. All right, so we get to Karen in Chicago. Spike Jones. Well, we can talk about him, but I doubt I'll play him, at least not right away. And James on the South Side and his stories. Oh, a fine crop of stories. And I see there's a line available for you. But right now, we'll find out what's going on in the world at large with WGN Radio.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around the door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around the door. You can wag your tail, but I ain't gonna feed you no more. You told me you was high. Oh, wag your tail. Oh, get it.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, written for her for Big Mama Thornton, Hound Dog, 1954, Lieber and Stoller's first major hit. Brian and Seneca wanted to hear it, and what it was Johnny Otis called him and said, hey, you know Big Mama Thornton? And they said, no. And he said, well, get over here because we need records. And Hound Dog was one of them in 54. And then just a few years later, of course, Elvis made it international, don't you know? So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh and Karen is in Chicago. What's going on, Karen?
Hi, how are you?
Can't complain.
You had mentioned that thing about a maraschino cherry being dropped in the whatever, in the lake or whatever.
Yes.
It reminded me, that album, I believe, came out somewhere in the late 60s. I had a party in Milwaukee. I lived in Milwaukee at the time, and one of my friends brought that record to a party.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, it was called Sounds Funny. And if I'm right, it was spelled S-O-U-N-D-Z, and then the word funny. And it would have different scenarios, and then the sound effects would come afterward. I remember there was one something about an elephant, and there was that maraschino cherry thing. There were several more, and you can imagine, my friend brought that to my apartment. I was having a party. Now, here we are with an apartment full of blind people, and you can imagine what a hoot that was with all those crazy sounds.
Right. It was 1965, actually. Stan Freeberg is who we're talking about. And
It was Stan Freeberg.
No, it was not. Absolutely not. It was Stan Freeberg. And Who Listens to Radio was a campaign he did, the whipped cream mountain was the one I was thinking of. But there were like six different things, and let me find whipped cream mountain because I'm sure I have it, and it does show you just exactly what the power of stretching the imagination and all that. But let me see if I can.
I don't know why I remember that so well. Yeah. My friend had gotten that record and brought into a party because he knew it would just make everybody hoot and holler.
Let's hear Stretching the Imagination. Yeah, it's worth it.
All right, watch this. Okay, Pete.
Let's back up and hear it from the beginning. Obviously, I played this before, though I don't remember when.
Radio. Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream to the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Force. Cue the maraschino cherry. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well,
you see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Doesn't television stretch the imagination?
Up to 27 inches,
yeah. So there you have it.
Oh, yeah, that's totally different than the one I remember.
Yeah, well, that was the campaign I was talking about. It was Who Listens to Radio, and like I say, it was there were six different bits. And,
You think I could find that on YouTube?
Sure, sure. Just
I think I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, just Stan Freeberg. It's Freeberg.
That is really great. Thank you. And you know what? I really enjoy hearing about Mr. Chubbs.
Oh yeah.
That was so much fun. I kind of look forward to hearing about him.
Me too. Me too. I'm looking forward to a picture. I want to see Mr. Chubbs.
Oh my! You'll have to describe him for us.
Yeah, absolutely. If Elizabeth sends me one, you betcha I will.
I am such an animal lover. I think sometimes I love animals more than I do people.
Well, that's not unusual. They're more honest, that's for sure.
Yeah, and at least when you talk to them, they agree with you.
Well, I don't know if I go that far. Whatever drugs you're taking, I want that prescription.
Well, every now and then. But for the most part, you know.
Yeah, boy. I don't know. Mine never listened too much, and they sure didn't talk back.
Well, I had 4 guide dogs, and then I've had cats for. I know my neighbors adopted a kitty, and they brought him home, and they were telling me about him, and I said, "Well, you got to bring him up down to see me because I never heard a meow I didn't like."
Isn't that sweet? Yeah.
Well. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I'm going to look that up on YouTube.
Yes, you will. You will like Stan Freberg. He's done a number of things that are just hilarious.
I've heard a lot. Yeah. My nephew has a whole lot of Stan Freberg. And I remember growing up with him. I remember his show on radio.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I remember all the, you know, the takeoff on Lawrence Welk and the takeoff on Dragnet. And
oh, of course.
All kinds of different ones. And
yep.
Our whole family used to enjoy those.
Yep. Well, good. You'll have fun with that. There's a lot of it there.
Well, thank you so
all
much.
Right.
And keep up the good work.
Thanks
and
for
when
calling.
You get a chance, I want to thank you for that Follow Your Heart for my birthday.
Oh, yeah.
That was wonderful. Thank you.
There will
when
be more,
chance,
more Manhattans.
Could you please, call somebody, please?
Oh, I love Call Somebody, Please. Absolutely, I will.
So
thanks.
Do I. Thank
appreciate
you
it.
So much.
All right, good deal. Yeah, and I promised John I'd play September, but it may be next week because I'm deferring to your requests first. And plus, he can listen to it here anytime he darn well wants, but we'll get it on for everybody to hear. Allie Willis wrote that. Chris in Greenwood, South Carolina. Movie you are in. All right, you're in a movie. Tell me about the movie.
I'm doing a short film for the Lander Film Festival, and we got until Wednesday to turn in as a 5-minute film.
Uh-huh.
And my tagline is, oh no, that's too much. And I got to figure something out how to put that in a movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, make it what it's about, the story.
Uh-huh. Well, give me the synopsis in a couple sentences. What's it about?
To be honest, I haven't written the script and
well, yeah.
I'm trying to think of maybe it's like too much coffee, maybe too much food or something like.
Hmm.
What are you saying? Like, oh no, that's too much.
All right.
Way too much or. Yeah, I'm trying to. That's our tagline because we get taglines.
Okay, so your tagline is too much. Well, of course, that's an Elvis record, too much. You can start there.
Yeah. And the actual film festival is on the 30th of March.
All right.
Atlanta.
And how long is your film going to be?
All films have to be 5 minutes long.
Well, exactly 5 minutes, and it can't be less.
Well, including the credits and the tagline in there,
yeah.
And the opening.
Okay. But it couldn't be 2 minutes if you wanted it to be 2 minutes. I mean, is five? Does everything have to be about five, or is that the maximum?
It has to be like the maximum.
Okay. All right. So you could have a 3-minute film if you wanted to.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, because I made films before, but the hard part is they give you a tagline and you can't exchange it.
Right, absolutely. And yours is too much. Well, like I say, you can start with the Elvis song.
Yeah, you gotta put it right where it is.
All right.
You have to figure it out yourself.
Well,
I can make short films at home.
Too much has been used as a phrase to mean so many different things. You could have people just saying it in different ways, and their inflection would tell you what they meant.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like, oh no, that's way too much. Like,
too much.
Like an old depressed song from the 1910s that sounds so sad. That's too much, right?
Yeah, well, see, there's many things you can do with too much. Let me know how it turns out.
Okay, and one more other thing I got to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You there?
I'm listening.
You ever look at the old production logo credits at the end of the TV shows?
I don't watch TV.
Yeah, you know, like, back in the day, they used to have, like, them scary logos like Viacom and...
Well, those were the syndicators, sure, Ziv or any of those, of course.
Yeah, because, you know, like, if it's on syndication, they usually cut the credits off before they get to the logo.
That's true.
Yeah, because I know, like, on WGN, like, on y'all TV, well, like, when they show reruns of, what shows y'all had, like, Barney Miller or something?
All the stuff on Antenna TV, yeah.
Yeah, they would cut the old Columbia Pictures television logo off, because, you know, it was right after the 4D Productions logo.
Well, there you are.
Yeah, because I missed the old time syndication. You can... like, watch stuff, but now it's just news.
Oh, you know, I mean, Antenna TV is all the old shows, so you can see a number of things.
And they play the credits in its entirety on, like, local syndication.
That I wouldn't know. Like I say, I'd have to watch it to know that.
I'll give you another example. Like, Golden Girls, because when they hit syndication in the late 80s, early 90s, they had the old, you know, they usually have the Touchstone television logo, but on syndication they would have the old Buena Vista Disney Castle logo in the end of it instead of the Touchstone.
Okay.
Yeah, and they would cut that off too.
Well, timing is everything. And so, you know, I assume that's it. But I bet you any logos you wanted to see and any outros you wanted to see, that's what YouTube is for. It's there and more.
Oh, yeah. Unless it's not copyright because...
Well, even if it is. Well, for that kind of stuff, I think you'd get away with it. All right. Good to hear from you. Let me know how it goes. Too much.
Okay.
I want to know.
Much, Raleigh James.
Okay, thanks.
I hope to talk to you next week.
Oh, I do too. Thanks. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888-Raleigh. We'll get to Sherry in Naperville, and I'll play a request, too, if you want to hear Papa Was a Rolling Stone, which means that we were going to play Ernest Tubb, and we'll save that for next week. Yeah, I've got a particular one picked out, too. So, final bumper of the Temptations will be coming up in moments right here on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's what you get as far as the Temptations version of Papa Was a Rolling Stone, 1972 on Gordy. That's actually a cover cover The Undisputed Truth. And it was Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong who wrote that in 1971. And Whitfield produced The Undisputed Truth version, that's for sure. And I assume he produced The Temptations on it as well. A little different feel for The Temptations version. So it was Sherry who wanted to hear it. And, well, all she got was 2 minutes of open. All right, Sherry, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thank you so much. But I also love the instrumental, the horns and the bass in the beginning. So it was perfect.
Okay.
But I do like the deep voice. At any rate, I'm calling tonight because you had mentioned the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
After that one guy that said he was born in, I don't remember, 1935. And then you said you had some collection of commercials that were kind of funny or something.
We got a ton of commercials. Yeah, what about them?
Well, no, I was just interested. It piqued my interest because I hear all these commercials on, when it was on the radio versus no TV. And a lot of them, I'm like, oh, I remember my grandma had that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what tooth powder. I can't even imagine how you would use tooth powder.
You need false teeth.
No, because they said and rub it on your gums.
Right.
So I just.
Right.
Oh, it was for false teeth?
Most of them were back then. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I remember my grandpa. He hadn't. He went to the dentist when he was younger and. I guess there was a lot of tooth problems back then, and that's why they put fluoride in toothpaste. But
well, that's another story. We could have an argument about that. Remember, the Nazis invented it. I'm not about to have anything with it. But anyway, but yeah, Polident and all that. So Fast Teeth was one of the denture powders that there were. There are a ton of them.
But he had so many teeth that the dentist said he had to take out.
Yeah.
My grandpa said to take all of them out then. And
God. That's a shame.
Well, and my grandma did the same. And I could tell you a funny, when I was a kid, bathtub story. Anyway, it is a funny story. But I wanted to ask, when you played that for, I can't remember her names. The girl that asked you to, and you did that maraschino cherry thing.
Yeah.
And then the first guy I'm assuming is the Sean.
It's Stan Freberg.
Yeah, but the second voice, it's like I can't place it. I've heard that voice before. Do you know who the second
I'd have to listen to it again. I wasn't paying any attention this time, but I thought it was all Stan Freberg.
No, there was Stan Freeberg, and then the other guy would say, bubble. He had a lower voice, and it just resonated, and I could not place it 6 ways till Sunday.
Well, you'll give me time to think about it, and I will. I'll pull the entire campaign over the weekend.
Okay, and then Eduardo, for some reason, stuck in my head when he went to Florida, and he took his mom with him, right?
Right.
And for some reason, I thought he was in healthcare.
Well, he had been, and he looked for jobs in the hospitals there, but nobody hired him. And John says, I better shut up and go away and talk to you next week.
That's fine, but I want to think about retirement homes and stuff.
All right, well, good enough. We'll talk to you next week.
Alrighty, love you.
All right,
thank
thanks.
You. Bye.
And apologies to James from the South Side. The wonderful stories. We'll review them next week as well. But until then, this is a wrap. Tomorrow night, it is a replay of Monday Night Trivia. Next Monday, it is a full live show. So all 3 hours. I think it's the only one next week that is a full show. And I'll be ready for you. So until then, that's a wrap. Thank you to Adam for keeping us on the air and to John for screening your call. But my thanks goes to you who called. Makes the show a pleasure to do. Talk to you Monday night. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.